tuning in to another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. We're online at HoosierAgToday.com. We're on the free Hat mobile app, and we're on great radio stations all across the state, bringing you the top news and information in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today, joined by my colleagues Andy Eubank, C.J. Miller, Sabrina Halverson, and Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin, who will let us know in just a little while if this hot, dry stretch will continue when he shares his Indiana farm forecast. Stick around for that. Andy will have grain market analysis coming up after USDA released acreage and grain stocks reports on Friday that hit corn futures pretty hard. CJ, Sabrina, and I share farm news, including why some cattle producers are upset with USDA, why USDA Secretary Vilsack is upset with House Ag Republicans, and why many pork producers and other ag groups aren't upset with House Ag Republicans. Hopefully you followed all that. And we'll talk about how much you might pay for that July 4th cookout you might have this week, or if you're lucky like me, how much someone else might pay for the cookout that you're attending, where you're likely to have seconds. But if you do that, don't be rude and show up empty-handed. Just do what I do. Find something cheap that you can put on a plate and take credit for making yourself. Oh, stop judging. Don't act like you've never done it. Anyway, on with the show. Let's begin with some policy talk. The National Pork Producers Council has made clear its support for the GOP Farm Bill frameworks in both the House and Senate. In addition to providing a legislative solution to the host of problems triggered by California's Proposition 12, they also address other priorities facing America's over 60,000 pork producers. One of those priorities is increasing market access program funding for U.S. pork. NPPC board member and Indiana farmer Jeb Stevens is a guest on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast from Hoosier Ag Today.
Last year, the U.S. pork producers exported $8.6 billion worth of pork to well over 100 different countries. And I think it's important to note that U.S. producers are really good at raising pork, and exports at whatever level are a significant key to our success in maintaining those exports. So any of those free trade agreements or countries that are taking advantage of free trade agreements, I mean, staff at NPPC is going to continue to push to fight for that market access and keep those channels of pork moving, ultimately just to maintain the price and economic futures of producers in the U.S.
Just because African swine fever hasn't been in the headlines lately, that doesn't mean it's gone away. Stephen says protecting herd health from that and other foreign animal diseases remains a priority.
I think it's important to note that we do have African swine fever in the Dominican Republic. That's not that far from the coast of Florida. And, you know, we have a lot of retail and a lot of tourism and a lot of vacationers that go there, you know, weekly. And, you know, making sure that we have a strong Beagle Brigade and we have strong information at all of our ports of entry for consumers and vacationers and tourists and whatever, just to understand the ramifications of what could potentially happen if there was a slip up with that virus, for sure.
Stevens is joined by Indiana Pork Executive Director Josh Trinari on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. You can hear it now at HoosierAgToday.com, the free Hat mobile app. You can also hear it on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. We also have another Indiana Ag Policy podcast that was just released this past week. We'll tell you about that one a bit later on in the show. As Indiana's farm families proudly show off their livestock at county fairs and the upcoming Indiana State Fair, animal health officials are spreading the word about biosecurity as the H5N1 virus impacts dairy cattle across the U.S. C.J. Miller has more.
We've had states nearby, including Michigan, that have been severely impacted by it, and they have changed their exhibition requirements. We have not to this point.
And that's Dr. Brett Marsh, state veterinarian with the Indiana State Board of Animal Health. He says that you should keep the following biosecurity measures in mind with your livestock during fair season.
Making sure that you continue to wash hands, not sharing equipment with your fellow exhibitors. And I know that everyone wants to pitch in and help, but with the events like this, the spread of that virus is very possible. And then if you have a lactating dairy cow at an exhibition, containing that milk, because we know the milk is carrying high viral loads of this H5N1 virus. Again, we've not had it diagnosed here, but making sure we're not dumping milk on the ground, et cetera, so that it doesn't get exposed to other animals or people.
He also recommends that biosecurity measures also be followed after the fair is over.
Making sure that you isolate the animal once you get home, which is standard procedure, we hope, so that if anything, including this virus, is contracted at the fair, then it's not spread to other animals, either on the farm or in the community.
Dr. Marsh says that things could rapidly change if the H5N1 virus is found in the state's dairy cattle before the start of the Indiana State Fair.
But again, this is a very fluid situation, and even though the state fair is, gosh, only a month or so away, there could be a lot of change take place in that period of time. So we would encourage people to continue to be aware of what's going on this particular virus. But as far as I know, in our conversations with the Indiana State Fair, there are no specific changes.
Read more at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm CJ Miller.
And I'm Eric Pfeiffer. More farm news on the way. Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin's Indiana Farm Forecast is coming up. Right now, it's time to talk markets on Hoosier Ag this week. And for that, Andy Eubank is here. Andy, this market picture has looked pretty bleak for a while now. And after Friday, USDA reports, it's not looking any better. I hate to say, I think you're becoming the bearer of bad news.
Okay, Mr. Pfeiffer, let's get this straight. I am the bearer of the bad news emanating from USDA's reports, which drove markets, especially corn, lower on Friday, okay? There's the delineation about who's bearing the bad news and who's not. And those USDA reports did have some bearish news within. We'll have settlements coming up, but first, reaction to the report and analysis. I got that from Brian Basting, Advanced Trading at the end of trade. Brian, the markets go lower, and right away it was apparent this was a double whammy of a report from USDA at noon Eastern time on Friday. Both the stocks number and the acreage number negative to the corn market. Can we call it a bearish report for corn, for starters?
Well, as always, it's good visiting with you, Andy, and I think you put a good phrase on it, a double whammy for corn, because you start to look at the old crop first, and that number of nearly 5 billion bushels was about 125 million bushels above the average trade estimate. The implication there is that the March, April, May feeding, Andy, to livestock and poultry, was below expectations, taking everything else at face value in terms of last fall's crop size. So not a good sign for demand. And then we start to look at 2024 here, and the USDA pegged acreage updated plantings of corn at 91.475 million. And that was compared to the average trade estimate of 90.4, so over a million acres above the average trade estimate. So yeah, it was a double whammy, and obviously the market was down hard earlier today and is holding those losses at the moment. So I guess for the moment, Andy, we have to take those numbers at face value. I think for new crop, there's still chapters to be written, as your listeners know. But from a risk management standpoint, what I'd emphasize, Andy, and underscore this as being the headline of the reports from a marketing perspective, is that we encourage producers to manage these lower prices if they've got positions in place. Strongly encouraged, because trying to pick a bottom is historically dangerous from the standpoint of the market will always surprise you. So manage these markets lower if you've got risk management positions in place. And now we've got the next chapter to be written in this story, Andy, is pollination. And a subchapter of that, if you will, is what will be the final acreage number, particularly up in Minnesota, Iowa, and South Dakota, where we've had that catastrophic flooding. So, but for the time being, there's no other way to look at those two reports other than being negative for corn.
Brian Basting, Advanced Trading. Brian's number 309-664-2314. On the Hat Friday Farm Market Review, July corn ends the day down 16.5 cents, 397 and a quarter, so below the $4 mark. September, 15 cents lower, 407 and a half. And Deese, 13 down at 420 and three quarters. July beans, 11.50 and a half, dropping a penny and three quarters. November goes three quarters of a cent lower, down to 11.04. And July wheat, 5.53 and a half, down six and a quarter. Meats mixed, August live cattle, 185.42, down $1.02, up $1.40 for the August lean hogs, 89.50. That is a look back at the Friday market picture and the USDA reports. I'm Andy Eubank. Much more to come on Hoosier Ag this week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
As you look at this biologicals market, does this current tight farm economy create a drive to adopt, or does it create a headwind where folks say, hey, look, I need to preserve everything I can, not try anything new, and drive the yield that I know that I can drive?
I think the answer is yes for both of those. I think it creates opportunity. The headwind is those growers that look at this as an add-on. If you're looking at biologicals as a, I'm going to add this cost of production, I'm not going to change anything else, I'm not going to tweak anything else, but I'm going to add whatever the number is, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30. I think that is an absolute headwind, and rightfully so. I tell people in our own organization, if farmers aren't asking that question, I have a little bit of concern.
Get more episodes online at agrinovusindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got plenty of moisture in the 10-day forecast window. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook. As we kick off this weekend, we're doing so with a little bit of moisture. Action fell in overnight last night, and we're still dealing with on-again, off-again showers here this morning. I think by the time we get to midday, early afternoon, most of Indiana will be winding down with the precipitation. All told, here over the past 24 hours, we probably will be ending up with half inch or so. Quarter to three quarters is my range, but half an inch is the most likely total out of this as we move through this period. We dry down overnight tonight, and I think Sunday is quite pleasant. Low humidity, temperatures that are not too shabby at all. We go into the start of the work week on Monday, and we keep that nice weather pattern around. High pressure actually being shown over Michigan, so we should get good sunshine and keep humidity values down. Maybe a little bit warmer on Monday. And then we start to see humidity climb overnight Monday night into Tuesday. Temperatures climb Tuesday as well, but at this point I'm keeping Tuesday dry. There's a monster weather system coming together in the upper Midwest and moving right across the Great Lakes. Michigan gets pounded with rain, I think, through the day on Tuesday, Monday night, Tuesday. But outside of clouds and maybe a renegade shower in northern tier counties of Indiana, I do not think the Hoosier State sees anything. Honestly, we see pretty decent sunshine, especially central and southern Indiana on Tuesday. Wednesday, we continue to see warm air in here, sunshine, blue sky, a little bit of instability off to our north and west. There's a frontal boundary trying to come through the upper Midwest and the central to western Corn Belt, but it does not show up now until overnight Wednesday night through Thursday. That's right. We're pushing our next weather system back a little bit. The July 4th holiday is at risk a little bit here. So we're going to keep an eye out for showers and thunderstorms through the 4th of July holiday, Wednesday night through Thursday. Rain totals can be anywhere from a quarter to 1 inch. Coverage right now looks to be 100%. We can even see moisture linger in central and southern Indiana through Friday the 5th. I think the northern areas clear out just a little bit. Going into the weekend then, the 5th into the 6th, hit and miss scattered showers and thunderstorms coming out of Wisconsin, northern Illinois, across northern Indiana and Michigan. So, yep, the rain shower activity is possible there. We'd see it having a long tail through Saturday afternoon, but overnight, Saturday night through Sunday the 7th, we clear out. I think we see good sunshine, pleasant temperatures, and then the week of the 8th, I think we're going to be starting to see a drier pattern emerge. I'm looking back over the western United States, the central U.S., not seeing any weather system come together. In addition to that, we're seeing heat build in the Great Plains, large upper-level ridge starting to come across the Rockies. I think this is going to be the transition week to a hot, dry finish to the month. That's what we're projecting here in the month of July. I'm meteorologist Ryan Martin.
Farmers and agriculture dealers, now is the time to inspect your combines for holes and wear in your threshing, feeder, and grain tank sections. Instead of costly replacements, try combine wear parts from Eile Fabrications. Many liners rivet or plug weld on top of the OEM, simply covering the wear. But Eile steel wear part liners are made with the best steel, are easy to install, and built to OEM specs to ensure a snug and seamless fit. Visit IHLEFabrications.com and elevate your harvest this season.
Welcome back. Thanks for joining us on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. As farm groups discuss priorities to take to the Indiana State House for the 2025 General Assembly, which isn't that far away, you can bet property taxes will be near the top of that list. The Indiana Department of Local Government Finance announced the base rate for farmland at $2,280 per acre for property taxes in 2025, a 20% increase from this year's $1,900, and the third straight year of big increases.
Farmers, I think, have kind of been hit exceptionally hard on property taxes this year, and the way they're figured, I mean, it's probably only going to get worse for the next so many years. Yeah, there definitely need to be some talks about what we can do to change the formulas on how things are calculated, but some of the increases just are not sustainable, and they won't be.
That's Joe Stoller, chair of the Indiana Soybean Alliance Membership and Policy Committee, who is a guest of mine on the latest Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, available now at HoosierAgToday.com. Stoller is joined on the podcast by Steve Howell, Senior Director of Industry Affairs for the Indiana Soybean Alliance. He says there will be a broad coalition of farm groups looking to get that property tax formula changed, and it'll take farmers stepping up to make it happen.
We need to hear stories from farmers. You know, what is that impact? I've got relationships with lawmakers both at the state and federal level. I talk with them often. It's good to have that connection, but without a farmer's story, you know, it just doesn't mean as much. So we need to hear from farmers what's the impact of a particular policy issue. So what are the numbers? You know, how bad have you been hit with the increase in property tax?
We discuss statewide and national policy priorities like biofuels and the Farm Bill on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, available now on your favorite podcast platform. Earlier this week, USDA announced a new rule for the livestock industry, which is unwelcome news for some. Sabrina Halverson has the story.
The USDA announced new action on the Stockyards and Packers Act. It says the fair and competitive livestock and poultry markets proposed rule would tackle longstanding challenges around interpretations of unfairness and competitive injury for the livestock, meat, and poultry sectors. However, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association issued a statement against the rule. NCBA Vice President of Government Affairs Ethan Lane called it a direct attack on cattle producer profitability. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack.
So in combination, what we've done is we've expanded transparency and made it easier for farmers to understand the deals that they're entering into and who they're contracting with. We made sure that they couldn't be discriminated against or retaliated against. We made sure that a tournament system would operate fairly and that there would not be any specific deductions that caught farmers by surprise. And today, we provide an enforcement tool that I think will provide for greater balance in the relationship between farmer and integrator.
But NCBA's Lane says, quote, by creating criteria that effectively deems any innovation or differentiation in the marketplace improper, USDA is sending a clear message that cattle producers should not derive any benefit from the free market, but instead be paid one low price regardless of quality, all in the name of so-called fairness. That again from NCBA's Vice President of Government Affairs, Ethan Lane. I'm Sabrina Halverson.
All right, Sabrina, thanks. Labor shortages continue to have a negative impact on Indiana's farms and the ag industry. As CJ Miller reports, that's why one ag organization is trying to bring solutions to the table.
The frustrating part is that we continue to hear the outcry that these issues need to be addressed, and unfortunately, there seems to be little action taking place.
And that's John Walt Boatwright with American Farm Bureau. He says that's the reason why Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall sent off a letter to USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack and the U.S. Department of Labor's Acting Secretary Julie Sue, asking for farm labor policy changes for both agencies. But Wright says that Duvall brought forth specific policy changes that could help solve many of the farm labor challenges.
The first is USDA has a purview over the farm labor survey, which determines the wage rates for the H-2A program. We ask them to really reevaluate and look at the farm labor survey to make improvements in those areas. And then the second major thing that we ask for from Department of Labor is a willingness and an interest to really engage with farmers and ranchers and understand the challenges that they're faced with.
Unfortunately, Boatwright says the stalemate on these policy discussions has gone on for far too long.
Nothing of late pertaining specifically to agricultural labor. So we're hopeful that this type of engagement will help jumpstart some of those conversations.
You can read the full letter from Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm C.J. Miller.
USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says House Republicans have written a largely political farm bill, and they need to get practical. He questions their math skills, saying it must be some kind of magic.
And I like to say that they've used Harry Potter's invisibility cloak to essentially cloak over what I think CBO says is at least a $30 billion deficit.
House Ag Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson claims his funding proposals do not cut any individual or family SNAP benefits over the course of the five-year farm bill. But Vilsack charges those cuts to offset higher crop supports or reference prices step on Democrats' red lines.
I think what we saw from the House Agriculture Committee is more of a political point of view, essentially establishing and providing just about everybody everything they're asking for. The problem, of course, is that there's not enough resource to be able to pay for all of that. And so, as the Congressional Budget Office has determined, there are multiple billions of dollars deficit in the House bill, which causes, I think, concern about whether it can pass the House and certainly have problems in the Senate.
Vilsack's hope is that we wouldn't have to do another extension of the current 2018 farm bill.
But obviously, if September 30th comes and goes and we haven't got a farm bill passed, at that point it would be appropriate for the Congress to pass an extension to give them sufficient time, hopefully before the end of the year, to get this farm bill passed.
Increasingly, the farm bill stalemate has prompted some lawmakers in both parties to say it might be better to wait until after the elections to write a five-year farm bill. Stick around. There's still much more to come here on the Weekend Show. If you look at this year compared to last summer, there is some relief at the grocery store, but those ground beef prices are still pretty high. That's next here on Hoosier Ag This Week from Hoosier Ag Today.
Podcasts are everywhere today, but how do you find the one that has something you're really interested in? The Hoosier Ag Today Podcast Network is your one-stop shop for podcasts covering Indiana agriculture, farm policy, farm news, agronomy, soil health, ag biosciences, and more can all be found at the Hoosier Ag Today Podcast Network. Check it out on the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app and at HoosierAgToday.com.
Thank you again for joining us on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and the 4th of July is coming up this week, and that means fireworks, pool parties, and most of all, having that summer cookout with your family and friends. As you head to the grocery store this week to stock up on ground beef, cheese, hamburger buns, even ice cream and cookies for dessert, you'll be paying slightly less than what you spent last year for your 4th of July cookout. Eric Pfeiffer has the story.
Indiana Farm Bureau's annual Summer Cookout Market Basket, featuring some of America's summertime staples, revealed Hoosiers are paying an average of $68.33 for a cookout, feeding 10 people this summer, or $6.83 per person, a 2% decrease compared to last year. Dr. Todd Davis, INFB chief economist, says the item that saw the largest increase in price was ground beef, which increased 14% from last year to $13.88 for 2 pounds and was 9% more expensive than the U.S. average.
And when you look at the total cost of the 4th of July meal, the ground beef is about 20% of your total cost. But you can attribute that to the cattle herd is at the lowest level since 1961. And that's just a result of continuous years of drought in the Southern Plains. So if the ranchers have had to deal with their own financial situation, they reduce their herd, and that just reduced supply shows up in the meat case, just lower inventory, lower supply, and higher prices.
Other items on the shopping list that were slightly more expensive in Indiana than last year include hamburger buns, pork chops, lemonade, potato salad, and strawberries. However, strawberries were 16% less in Indiana than they were around the country.
Well, this is just anecdotal information, but we've heard that specialty crop producers in central Indiana had a strawberry crop that was harvested earlier than normal. And so, and all these items in the market basket survey depend on local supply and demand conditions. And so I think for this item, people were able to enjoy fresh strawberries earlier this year than in other years.
Read more and hear our full interview with Davis and INFB Second Vice President Janice Hiley about the Indiana Farm Bureau Annual Summer Cookout Market Basket Survey at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
And finally, we hope you enjoy listening to the many different podcasts that we have available through the Hoosier Ag Today Podcast Network to help keep you informed of the latest news in Indiana agriculture. One such podcast that is both informative and entertaining is from our friends at Premier Ag and Energy called The High Ground Podcast, powered by Premier Companies.
We've had a lot of esteemed guests on, and sometimes it's just us talking, which is not that esteemed, but people seem to enjoy it.
And that's Ryan Priest, the COO of Premier Companies, based in Seymour. He's one of the co-hosts of the High Ground Podcast, powered by Premier Companies. The other co-host is Sal Sama, Vice President of Sales and Marketing with Premier Companies. And since starting their podcast more than 2.5 years ago, they're now approaching 150 episodes.
Yeah, it's got a lot of traction, and I think that's attributed to our guests and the format. Obviously, we tend to have a lot of fun with it. We certainly pride ourselves on being positive advocates for agriculture and energy and supporting Indiana agriculture for sure. So we've got a good format, and the information seems to be well received.
Among Indiana's ag leaders who have been the featured guest on their podcast include ISDA Director Don Lamb, as well as Courtney Kingery, the CEO of Indiana Soybean Alliance, Indiana Corn Marketing Council, and Indiana Corn Growers Association.
And the value that they provide to our listeners and those that surround Indiana agriculture is invaluable. And certainly those episodes have covered a plethora of topics. And we worry about the farm bill all the way down to our more regular guests that come from internally that talk about the agronomic effects of pests or weeds or the weather or whatever might be on their crops.
In addition to talking about policies and news impacting Indiana agriculture, Ryan and Sal also ask each guest the question of the day, and that may not even involve agriculture. You may find them talking with their guests about their favorite music, movies, and TV shows.
The question of the day, we get a lot of response from that, saying that is the funniest thing, or that just gives us such a human perspective of the people we're talking to. And it's certainly, it's not meant to embarrass anyone, but it's certainly well received. In fact, I hope it's not so popular that we ought to move it to the end of the podcast so they listen to the rest of it. But yeah, it's been a good format. We release a new one at 6 p.m. every Monday, so they're weekly released, and it's available on every platform. We do video it as well, so YouTube is an option if you want to watch it, but also the audio-only versions are available, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google.
Of course, the best way to find the High Ground Podcast, powered by Premier Companies, is at their website, premierag.com. It's also parts of the Hoosier Ag Today podcast network at HoosierAgToday.com. And that does it for another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. Speaking of podcasts, if you missed any portion of today's show, you can download the podcast version, and that's at HoosierAgToday.com. For Eric Pfeiffer, Andy Eubank, Sabrina Halverson, and Hoosier Ag Today's chief meteorologist, Ryan Martin, I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.